This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:53. You are listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Ayman. We are moving on to our next story where we're looking at ASEAN's place amidst the seeming competition between the United States and China for influence in Southeast Asia. So this is after a study by ICES Yusuf Ishak. It found that Southeast Asians are increasingly concerned that the region will be a battleground for influence among the world's superpowers.
And we can actually see this battle happening, for example, in the form of competing development programs, because China, of course, as you may know, is embarking on the Belt and Road Initiative in the region. But last year, the US launched its own Blue Dot Network, which was seen by many as like their own response or counter strategy against the BRI. And this is to promote sustainable infrastructure development in the Indo-Pacific. Mm-hmm. So I guess that with these competing challenges from the major superpowers, right, it's no surprise that apparently 73.2% of respondents to the ICES Yusuf Ishak study said that they were worried that Southeast Asia is becoming an arena of major power competition and that the countries in the region may become proxies for major powers.
Lead author of the study, Tang Siu Man, said that Southeast Asians look to ASEAN to preserve its independence and strategic autonomy by staying united in the face of power rivalry. But, you know, there remains some disappointment that the tangible benefits of community building and economic integration have not been felt directly on the ground level. And of course, that refers to ASEAN, which, while it is a bloc that seems to exist, I think, on the ground as an identity, as a feel, it's not so much had an impact yet.
Yeah, that's true. There have been some efforts to create a more community feel among ASEAN member states and their people as well. They created the ASEAN community back in 2015, which covered politics, economics, and socio-cultural pillars, which was ideally meant to, you know, engender a more feeling of togetherness with your fellow ASEAN brothers. But I think we can look around us to the general folk on the street. Mm. They don't really know what ASEAN does for them. There's no economic benefit to it. So when considering ASEAN's place, you know, amidst all this power struggle in Southeast Asia by the huge major superpowers, it feels like we are left to deal with this alone, like country by country kind of basis. It doesn't feel like, you know, ASEAN is united in terms of dealing with these struggles. Even in terms of economic international trade, for example, even though there are these multilateral agreements, at the same time, there are also bilateral agreements between the member states itself. For example, Singapore with another country, for example, which doesn't include other ASEAN states. So that's the lack of that togetherness, I think, really does make us vulnerable towards these propositions by these superpowers. You know, we can offer you development in return, you know, we like to have some influence in the region.
Yeah, and on that note about coming together, even on political issues like the South China Sea, that has been, I guess, that has been quite difficult to come up with a united front, right? I think simply because ASEAN sort of operates on the basis that, look, if not everyone agrees on this, we won't be able to take action immediately. So what happens is if, let's say, one of the nations, China or US or even Japan, right, manages to persuade and sway one country to have a different point of view, then the rest of the ASEAN nations have no choice but to say, okay, well, we can't seem to reach consensus on this, which of course has been not helpful in dealing with some of the things, right? And even in some of the issues that pertain to ASEAN and the major superpowers. And I guess you can also see from the survey itself what it implies, that, you know, which countries seem to favor which superpower. You know, most regions, the 7 out of 10 nations favor China, but 3 favor the US, and that's the Philippines, that's Vietnam, and that's Singapore. Well, looking at Philippines, and I think they've been the one that's been quite vocal against China when it comes to sovereignty claims in the South China Sea upon some of its perceived interactions in that area. And I guess likewise goes for Vietnam as well, who has benefited from the US defense strategy.
And I think what that also suggests is that there are still some elements of, because if you think about it, obviously development is unequal among ASEAN member states. So you've got the relatively less developed countries, for example, in Laos, which is closer to China geographically as well. And so you can see that, you know, for countries that are less developed, it would be natural to, you know, think about your own country first, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
We need the infrastructure. We need the economic benefits that come with the development of infrastructure. We happen to be closer to China geographically. So it makes sense for us to deal with our neighboring country. And I think the sort of delineation or sort of like differentiation between the original five member states of ASEAN who are relatively more developed than the rest of the region, that does create certain groupings within the bloc itself, you know, some who are more leaning towards China's offering in the BRI and some maybe more open to the US's developmental aid.
Yeah, and really, if you look at it regionally, I think in Malaysia as well, we're all sort of playing the same game within the ASEAN region, which is that we can't pick a side. Mm. So we try our best to be friendly with everyone, get the best deals out of everything. And it's likely the strategy we need to continue playing, and we cannot definitely afford to make any of the choice, because later on, we might find ourselves stuck in a position that we cannot make better economic deals. We cannot even get certain development that we need. Now, on the line with us to discuss this is Huang Tiha, lead researcher at the ASEAN Studies Center of the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute. Tiha, thanks so much for joining us. So the survey showed that 73% of respondents felt like the region could become a battleground for super country rivalries. Where are these concerns coming from?
Southeast Asia lies at the intersection of many major powers' interests. So the people in the region have always been exposed and sensitive to the fluid and increasingly uncertain dynamics in major power relations. And such sensitivity and concern have been heightened over the past couple of years due to the burgeoning rivalries between the major powers, especially those that involve the U.S. and China. And as you can see, throughout 2019, no day passed without some sensational headlines on the media about U.S.-China trade war or tech war or even ideological competition. So it is just in this increasingly bipolarized atmosphere that people in the region feel the stress and the strain of the major power rivalry on the region and the regional governments.
And when the survey said that the countries or regions may become proxies for the interests of major powers, what does that mean? Have we seen that taking place within Southeast Asia already?
I think to some extent that is happening now on the South China Sea issue, where some ASEAN member states have prioritized their relations with China over and above the need to foster ASEAN unity and a stronger position to push back against Chinese assertive actions at sea.
Right. Doesn't this seem to imply that ASEAN has limited power and agency in determining our own affairs? Is that an accurate viewpoint?
I don't think that we should underestimate the determination and the ability of ASEAN member states to exercise their agency and secure their autonomy as well as defend their national interests, especially through ASEAN as the regional grouping. Actually, ASEAN is no stranger to major power competition, and it has developed some common script and pathways to deal with this kind of competition. For example, ASEAN-led mechanisms such as the East Asia Summit, the ASEAN Defense Minister Meeting Plus, and the ASEAN Regional Forum continue to provide the neutral and inclusive ground for dialogue and cooperation for all countries that have a stake in the region. So as long as ASEAN member states work closely together through ASEAN to keep this region open and inclusive, I think regional states would have a better chance to resist the increasing bipolarization in regional politics.
So the survey also found that China was coming up as the more dominant and influential economic force compared to the US. So can you talk to us about what is driving this perception, and what would you say if it's economically accurate or not?
I think geographical proximity means that China's economic influence is acutely felt in the region, and with good reasons, because China is now the largest trading partner and also the largest source of foreign tourists to the whole region. And Chinese investments are flowing into Southeast Asian countries in increasing volumes. The Chinese government's efforts to intensify economic integration with ASEAN, especially under the Belt and Road Initiative banner, has also further intensified the perception of China's pervasive economic presence. But I would think that this perception is not completely accurate. Southeast Asian economies are very open, and other major powers have strong economic influence and presence in the region too. For example, China may be the largest trading partner of most regional countries, but the U.S. has been their largest export market. And American investment inflows to the region more than doubled that of China from 2010 to 2018. Apart from the U.S., Japan still holds the largest value of infrastructure projects in Southeast Asia, well ahead of China. And the EU is also an important partner and investor for the region. So obviously there is a gap between this perception and the reality on the ground.
Most countries in the region seem to favor China, but the three who would favor the US are the Philippines, Vietnam, and Singapore. Why is this the case? How would China be able to win over these three nations?
I think for the Philippines and Vietnam, the reason is very obvious. They are concerned over Chinese increasing power and the ability to threaten their sovereignty claims and maritime rights and interests in the South China Sea. For Singapore, it is quite an interesting case because the majority of its population are of Chinese ethnicity, but Singapore identifies itself not as a Chinese country, but as a multiracial meritocracy and an open city-state embracing the world as its hinterland. So there is a different perception there in terms of the way it governs itself and identifies itself.
And conversely, what would it take for the U.S. to sway the other seven nations?
I think the U.S. Has to do more to live up to the statement that the U.S. is here and it is a resident power in the region. So there is an increasing sense of uncertainty with regard to the commitment of the U.S. To engage with the region diplomatically, but more importantly, in terms of economic cooperation as well. And the U.S., unlike China, is here not because of geographical proximity, but because of a geopolitical consideration. So there is always this concern that the U.S. may be distracted and too preoccupied on not only with its domestic politics, but also with other parts of the world to really pay attention to the region.
Are the two superpowers forcing ASEAN to pick a side?
I think at least officially and diplomatically, both Washington and Beijing have explicitly said that they do not want ASEAN to choose. So that gives some leeway and breathing space for ASEAN, at least in principle. But in reality, choices are thrust upon regional states in many cases and in many ways. One pertinent example is the U.S. government sanctions on Huawei and its pressures on other states' choice of their 5G network provider. Or in the security realm, the choices presented are even starker. For example, which country should be the preferred partner for regional states' arms procurement and for their defense industry collaboration?
Right, and finally, Tiha, on the subject of ASEAN, do you see a need to strengthen it as it stands? What are the gaps in our partnership and what will we need to focus our efforts on?
I think there are quite a few critical gaps that need to be addressed. First of all, it is the gap in the leadership, because I think most ASEAN leaders now are quite preoccupied with their domestic politics, and they still confirm that ASEAN is a cornerstone of their foreign policy, but not much of attention and investment in terms of diplomacy and political capital in forging more unity and consultation among member states on issues that face the region. And the second gap is in terms of the identity, actually, and because ASEAN member states are so diverse, and so it is important to make sure that ASEAN member states, when they gathered under ASEAN, then they have the unity of purpose, and then to pool their capabilities as well to address issues that affect the whole region. So I think there are two gaps that are very important, the leadership and also the identity gaps.
Tiha, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. That was Hong Tiha, lead researcher at the ASEAN Studies Center of the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute, discussing a recent survey that found that Southeast Asians are increasingly concerned that the region will be a battleground between the US and China. We have some music coming up. It's Ram Jam with Black Betty. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.